Welcome back to The Bonfire, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with some of those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. With a rare off week for the UFC to celebrate Thanksgiving, PFL has the opportunity to step into the spotlight. 2024 PFL Championship goes down Friday in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And although it should be a time of celebration for the company on multiple fronts, there is a bit of a cloud of uncertainty hanging over the organization, especially with the Bellator branch. Complaints from a number of current Bellator champions have come in over the past few days, expressing their frustration with an inability to get fights as contracted and as promised. And that has painted some negative headlines around the company going into this Friday season finale for them. All of this comes almost exactly on the one-year anniversary of when PFL acquired Bellator and kind of formed a singular company, but have had splintered brands and all this stuff. And it has raised a lot of questions about what exactly is going on with a company I once dubbed PFLator, UFC CEO Dana White, stealing that name from me. But who's here to take credit? Not me. Maybe me. But nevertheless, felt like the perfect time to kind of address the state of the union and whether we should head into 2025 with a feeling of optimism or a feeling of dread. And joining me to get to the bottom of that will be none other than my longtime MMA junkie colleague and friend, Mr. Nolan King, the World MMA Award nominated journalist who has spent a lot of time around the Bellator brand, especially pre-COVID, before the purchase, all that stuff. So some really great knowledge and insight on Nolan's front to bring to the table to this discussion. Before we get into it, please remember to hit the like, subscribe, leave a comment on whatever platform you are on. It all is helpful as we try to grow the show. So as soon as you do that, we'll be right back from a short break with Mr. Nolan King. We are back here on The Bonfire with a first-time guest of the show, one of my very good friends, my co-worker for years over at MMA Junkie. It is Mr. Nolan King. Nolan, welcome, man. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's great to be here, man. I'm pumped that you're doing this. I've watched a handful of the episodes so far, and exciting times. I'm excited to be a character on this program for once. Yeah,
and I thought it was perfect timing. I mean, the first event we covered together was a Bellator event. I'll throw up this pic right now. I don't know if you remember this one back in New York. I think that was a Bellator pay-per-view or something, and that was our first time covering an event together. So it felt fitting.
I believe it was my first day with Junkie. Like, I think I had worked maybe a shift the day before, and then, you know, I'd gotten hired that week. So, Simon sent me, and I think it was you and John Morgan down there. I just came for fight night. I think I just came to kind of meet you guys. And yeah, it was my first time, my first event for Junkie, my first week for Junkie. And I think either my second or third day for Junkie. So time flies, man, huh?
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. That was 2019. And here we are, 2020, almost coming to the end of 2024. And I thought it was very fitting to have you on as we kind of talk about the state of the union here with PFLator a bit. And first thing I wanted to kind of ask you off the top, I mean, the merger or the acquisition, whatever you want to call it, was made official November 20th, 2023. So pretty much almost exactly a year ago at this point. A lot has happened since then. So I'll just ask you straight off the top, how would you grade year one of the PFL Bellator experience?
Man, I hate to say it, but it would be low. It'd be like a D plus. You know, I think if C is kind of the average, what we were expecting, I think it's been below average. I think there was a lot of excitement on our end about what would happen once Bellator and PFL merged. And I thought I saw both brands doing some things that were good and some things that were bad. And in my brain, I thought, you know, maybe the good from both sides will be taken into this and make like a nice equation here. I do think though, however, that a lot of the same tendencies that were bad with the old PFL regime have just carried over and kind of affected the wave of fighters and people that work for the promotion, everybody that's come over from Bellator in a kind of a negative way. So I'm not saying like that they didn't do anything right. I think having Francis fight for them was great. I think, they've obviously acquired some top tier talent, like the guys we're going to talk about with Patricio and Patchy Mix and the like. So there's certainly things, there's potential there. There's things to be excited, but I just think the execution has not been good. I mean, they laid out a schedule for Bellator. Half the events were canceled. I'm sure we're going to get into it more, but if C is kind of an average passing grade, I can't be going that high. So I have to go like D plus, man. I think it's been a fair amount of disappointment on my end about what I foresaw potential collaboration between these two brands looking like.
Yeah, I think my grade would be around the same. And that is disappointing because I remember right after that happened, this week is obviously the 2024 PFL Championship Week. They're kind of big, significant conclusion event. I know there's one more event on the schedule for December, but you know, I was there for the 2023 championship and it was right on the tail end of when this happened in Washington, D.C. Had to go down there very last minute because our colleague Matt Erickson, I think, got COVID or something like that. But there was so much excitement in there. There, like, the people were stoked. It just felt like there's so much hope and all that kind of stuff. And if you look a year later, it doesn't really feel like it's shaked out that way. How much would you say did your grade drop after these recent complaints from the Bellator champions come out? Like, if I asked you the same question last week before Patricio Pitbull, Corey Anderson, and Patchy Mix put out like their statements airing frustration with their inability to get fights, did that drop your grade at all? Or would you have said the same if I asked you this a week ago?
I think I'd probably have had it around the same. It's very impactful. I think it's kind of just like the pinnacle public airing of these grievances that have been going on. But it does sound like behind the scenes that there's has been a growing issue. And I think even when we did a little reaction to the Bellator PFL merger, when that news broke, like you said, about a year ago, you know, one of the things that I said that I was kind of concerned about, the criticisms that I was starting to hearing behind the scenes with PFL, was that a lot of times the athletes, the teams, the coaches, the managers felt like they were talking to, you know, kind of just talking suits, like, you know, just talking heads that didn't really understand the sport and they weren't very communicative and everybody was just kind of a number and they didn't really understand what was going on. So that was a concern that I had with PFL. That was an attribute that existed before this merger. And I think it's just carried over. And so you go from the thing about the Bellator regime with Scott Coker, to their credit, I think, was they did a very good job of, you know, there's a disgruntled athlete, there's a problem, let's try to fix it. We don't want this to look bad, you know. And a lot of times, I wouldn't say all the time, I'm not trying to take all the blame off of them and make them sound perfect. They were certainly far from that. But I do think that they had great, like, beds, you know, I don't know what you'd call it, tableside manner, bedside manner, whatever the expression is, right? Where they were able to, whether it was Mike Kogan, whether it was Coker, whether it was Jane Estioko, the old matchmaker, like, was able to kind of diffuse situations, make people happy. And maybe a lot of times there were some issues that were more like resource based, right? Like, this isn't, they weren't the UFC that had a bazillion people working for them. They had, you know, sometimes Mike Kogan would be doing the translating. I had a guy that was in the marketing department do the translating one time, you know, people setting up the backdrop that have, you know, the matchmakers and stuff for when we're doing interviews. Like, it was very, a very small operation. So I think a lot of times there were more issues on that end with them. But now it seems like, you know, people kind of getting ghosted, being misled, like, the merger, there's contracts, right, that don't seem to be, like, PFL didn't really want them, but they bought them. So I don't know. It's just a really messy time. There's a lot of uncertainty. And as we roll into 2025, I mean, not having, I think they have one Bellator event. We don't really know what else is going on. So it's a lot of confusion, man, both for the public and for, you know, the fighters behind the scenes.
Yeah, and if we can even call it a Bellator event, I mean, you're talking about the January 25th show that they announced recently for Dubai, headlined by Usman Nurmagomedov against Paul Hughes, which is an amazing fight, one of the best fights that can be made out of their entire roster. But if you look at that, the branding they sent out on the press release, it's like Road to Dubai now. The only reference to Bellator, either on the graphics or within the press release, was referencing Usman Nurmagomedov as the Bellator lightweight champion. But other than that, it wasn't very clear in terms of, like, the Bellator branding. Do you feel like this is the beginning of that kind of being phased out going into 2025?
I mean, I think they'd be smart to not make it this difficult for people, right? Like, I think there's been a million different brands, and I get it. They're trying to get their footing under them. They're trying to make it seem, you know, try to find a way to make sponsorships work, to make deals work, to make contracts work, to make it make sense that they have two brands and they have champions and figure it out. But to me, I think it went in way too many different directions. It got very confusing, I think. You know, if you were to just have PFL and then, like, some sort of Challenger Series thing, and you could do MENA, you could do Europe, you could do whatever, I think that would be, like, pretty understandable for people. But to have the PFL brand, the Bellator brand that, like, kind of exists but has had events canceled, now it's called Dubai, and then they have PFL MENA and PFL Europe and PFL, it's just, I think it's a little overwhelming for people that maybe are trying to get invested, right, to follow the fighters and kind of learn their story. It's just, there's so much going on. So I would like to see them. I think in 2025, it would really behoove them to maybe try to get everything under the same umbrella. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to dive into it, but one of the things I would like to see is like to scrap the tournament format at this point. I think to put the best fights on and to really show that you are the number two or you're trying to be the number one in the world. Like, I think to kind of have a more traditional sense, like there's no need to be that different anymore. It was cool, but I think there's more downside to it than upside. Like whether it's I guess they threw in elbows now, but like not having elbows in the regular season because you're afraid that somebody's going to get cut. Or, you know, the same fights that we saw 6 months prior that were not great, we have to see them again because they're in a bracket, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of changes that they could make. There's a lot of potential, right, for them to do really well. It's just a matter of which, you know, how many moving parts are there, who's making these decisions, and kind of who are they trying to, what are the goals here? Who are they trying to appeal to, right?
For sure. Yeah. And we'll get a little more into kind of our thoughts going into 25, but I guess if we kind of take a few steps back on like still this merger element of it. What do you think ultimately like went wrong here? Because I do think that there is people over there, you know, we know people behind the scenes on the upper end, like there is good intentions, I believe. I don't think anyone came into this wanting things to go awry. I think they had a plan that they were hoping to execute and it didn't come together for, I don't know what reason or the other. I mean, when they made this purchase, you feel like you would have done your due diligence knowing what these guys are paid and all those sorts of things. I mean, I know it's a little bit out there. If you see like some people comment on Twitter behind the scenes, like it seems like Scott Coker and the Bellator regime did sign a lot of fighters to maybe some deals that maybe other promoters would not give them. But those are the type of things that you would think you do your due diligence on when you're making the purchase and have to be prepared to follow through from. And that seems to be a huge crux of the issue that's kind of led into these complaints. You know, I think Patricio Ferreri laid it out the most in depth out of anyone who's kind of complained about where the resources are going, attempts to renegotiate contracts, things like that. How does this happen? I mean, when you go and purchase something, you feel like you got to know what you're doing there. And it seems like they just made the investment and then we're like, we're going to try to figure it out on the back end.
Yeah. And that's the kind of confusing part about the whole thing is like, if you break this up into pieces, right, I don't necessarily disagree that some of these Bellator contracts were really huge, right? Like, especially maybe for some of the more veteran guys. Like I think Douglas Lima, for example, had kind of an issue. They didn't want to pay him maybe the salary that he was, because it was probably the similar thing to what, you know, some sort of championship fallback pay where he was the biggest star. He was great. Then he lost a bunch of fights and he's still on this huge deal, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that they renegotiated that one. But to me, like, I don't disagree with the notion that maybe the Scott Coker regime had guys under contracts that were way too much. Granted, I think a big part of their branding and their trying to appeal to people was like trying to get these guys and trying to make them stay, right? So I don't, again, you can criticize Coker for the Coker regime for signing that. You can criticize, basically what I'm trying to say is like, I think when you're buying something, if you're going to buy a brand, you kind of should know what the contracts are. And I'm assuming they did. So once it got over that hill to kind of be wishy-washy with some fighters or kind of indicate like, we don't want to pay you this much. We want to renegotiate or, you know, we're going to let you go. Like, I don't know. I think that was maybe a little bit opposite of the message they were portraying to people about being fighter first and all this other stuff. And so it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And especially with like guys, like I said, this on Spinning Back, like I said it on Twitter too, is like, If you were going to find a guy that would refuse to even bat an eyelid or give anybody any sort of secret sign that he was 1% unhappy with Bellator, it was Patricio. You know, I think the only time I ever heard him say anything was when there was one time I think Coker had said something about Chandler being the Bellator goat, and he kind of took exception to that a little bit. He felt a little disrespected. But outside of that, the guy has always flipped any sort of, you know, will you go to the UFC? Where do you think you stack up with the UFC fighters? You know, are you happy here? Fighting outside the UFC, do you feel like you're the best? Always flip it. Always say, like, I want to make MMA be the sport. I don't want to make the UFC be the sport. And I want to show people that I'm, you know, Bellator's got great fighters and blah, blah, blah. Like, very thought out, intentional answers that he didn't want to criticize. So for him to come out in something that seemed extremely well thought out, pre-written, planned, like, each tweet seemed to have its own thought, very to the point. Like, there was a lot of information and a little amount of, which I know for us writers is a difficult thing to do. For him to do that, like, I was like, okay, this is not, this is, something's wrong, right? You can kind of, you can kind of deduce that a bit. So again, there should be two sides to every story. I've reached out to PFL for comment. I have not heard back from them about this. So I'm thinking that there'll be some questions about that this week. I'm not sure what media groups are going to be over there covering it. So maybe not, but it's just messy, man. It's just not good. Not a good time.
Yeah, it's very confusing. I mean, just how they've kind of let this go through. Because as I said off the top, I think there was the good intentions with the events. And, you know, I think they obviously had some stuff to honor in terms of like international television contracts. That's why maybe this didn't happen right off the bat. So that's kind of what you're seeing a little bit. But yeah, as you kind of said, if they're touting themselves to be, you know, the fighter first brand, to have this volume of complaints, even going back to the Gegard Mousasi situation, which is still ongoing. I believe he's filing a lawsuit or has for breach of contract stemming from their stuff. I know you talked to Yaroslav Amosov, who maybe wasn't like super vocal, but he seemed somewhat happy to get out of there. And you see a few of the others. And this is just the reality of what you have to do is the number two, right? We talk about the contracts, like you have to overpay for this talent in order to get them over. And that's when you start hearing, you know, compliments of how well fighters are treated and how happy they are with their pay and how you foster good word in the industry about signing with you. And it feels like this is going a little bit backwards there, but I don't think like hope is lost, right? Like, do you think this is tarnishing the reputation of like the PFL brass, the brand within the industry, or do you think this is still quite salvageable for them going forward into 25?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe a little bit of a wake-up call. It's maybe a little bit of an uphill battle as well. I think particularly with Don Davis, like I appreciated the interview, that the town hall interview he did with MMA Fighting. Like, I know when that was announced, I was like, okay, good for this guy. Like, he's trying to be transparent. Obviously, it in his answers, it backfired quite a bit. It gave people a lot of ammunition to use against him. And it's kind of unfortunate because like now that's probably the prototype of why people won't want to do stuff like that. But I like to think that they can take some of this criticism or whatever. And again, those are the guys like that. I think if anybody can make a difference, it's the guys that are people outside of the fans that watch every event or the media that watches every event. Like, they might know the Patricio Pitbulls, they might know the Corey Andersons, they might know the Patchy Mixes, they might be excited to see them, right? There's always that storyline of like, what if the UFC doesn't have the best guy in the world? What if it's this guy? Like, that is something that will always be very promotable for the number two brand, whoever it is. So for those guys, the number, you know, the potential best in the world guys that the PFL has, to three of them come out and collectively say this all at the same time, I would think if I was the PFL brass, I would not want the people that are on my posters to be publicly complaining about something and pointing to it's very specific too, like some of the stuff, right? It's not like, oh, I'm unhappy, they're not giving me fights. Like, Patricio gave specifics of what he was told when, like, those are sort of things that like, if you ran a promotion, you wouldn't probably want that much information being out there. So I would like to think that this is a wake-up call for them, and especially coming up at the end of a year where there's a championship and then they have a clean slate to do whatever they want next year. I hope they do take some of this feedback, and I hope it works out, man. I think all of us want there to be as much competition as possible. You know, I would love it if we could see the best fights the PFL has to offer. It's just a matter of them doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And we're just here trying to kind of figure out what's going on, hold some accountability. Like you said, it's better for everyone if there is a successful, strong number two or three or whatever you want to call it in the industry, not just the fighters, but the media, everyone involved, managers trying to negotiate contracts, all those things. And this is just, where I don't get where things went wrong. I mean, it's one thing if maybe you took too many fighters over and you got to trim some of the fat off the bottom from the guys who maybe aren't relevant or aren't being paid a lot, but to have three of your champions essentially come out in unity. And I don't know if that was something they talked about together behind the scenes, or Corey Anderson just went first and then Patchy Mix happened to have some similar frustration. And then Patricio saw that because they were all a couple days apart, but I don't know, maybe it was kind of designed. And if so, I think it worked out well. But yeah, these are the guys you can't have complain. And you mentioned that Patchy Mix might be the best bantamweight in the world. You know how we don't find out? By him not fighting. So that's really what I just don't understand about the whole thing going off that. But we'll see. I mean, I think they're trying their best. I don't know if they're going to try to phase out Bellator in 25. I mean, what's your hunch? Do you think this all just completely comes together going into next year? I know you said they have an open book and kind of on the tail end, we'll get some ideas out there of what we want. But do you think this is slowly coming to an end?
I thought so until this Dubai event popped up. You know, I think that makes me seem, again, I don't know, the branding of it is like Dubai Championship Series now, but they have the Bellator champ headlining. So I don't really know if that's considered a Bellator event or not.
Dude, it's made it so difficult for, I just thrown out tracking my stats, like my company stats. I used to do like the pre-event facts and post-event facts that I do for every UFC card for Bellator. But now it's like, I don't know what to count it. You got PFL versus Bellator fights too. Like, where does that count towards? So it's very confusing, kind of the brand cross-contamination. But you see like that they can pluck guys on any card. I mean, they signed Paul Hughes to come in to be part of the 25 tournament. I think the original plan was just to have him do one fight in between, but here we are. He has his third fight on the books, and I imagine he's not doing the tournament. So it's good that they have the freedom to kind of move these guys around. But you know, if your best, highest paid and, you know, most notable fighters aren't able to get fights, that seems like a huge problem.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned it there, like you see flashes of glimpses of brilliance too. Like, that's a great fight. That's an awesome fight. Usman and Paul Hughes, it's intriguing. I think they branded it well with doing the Ireland versus Dagestan, you know, part two or whatever they're calling it. Like, there's a lot of good things to be excited about. They've done a good job with certain markets, right? They've gone to Ireland. They've killed it there. France, they've done well. Japan, they've done well. They've done great with Ryzen crossover. Like, that's, there's a lot of stuff that it's not all bad. So it's kind of disappointing when that good stuff gets overshadowed, the good matchups, the things that we're excited for, by, you know, during your championship card in Saudi Arabia, all your champions are coming out, right? You may announce an Usman versus Paul Hughes fight, but then again, the narrative is this. So it's unfortunate, but I do think they have the ability, if they do make good decisions, to kind of rebound things.
Yeah, and I remember when we did, at the end of 2022, like our top five stories of the year, we talked about who the number two promotion was in MMA, and you said PFL, I believe I said Bellator, and here we are, you know, 2 years later. I mean, I think now they're just the number two via default. I mean, one championship has its own set of issues. We could do a whole other podcast on that. And then like beyond that, I mean, I know there's the Cage Warriors and the Octagons and the KSWs. They are still doing good things, but I don't think they've done anything to necessarily put themselves on that totem pole where we consider them right here. But yeah, PFL kind of has it by number two default, but that wasn't your argument back then. Yours was they have the ESPN deal, they have the same platform as the UFC, all that stuff. And those are still big checks in their favor. They tried two pay-per-views this year, the February show with PFL champions versus Bellator champions, and then the Francis Ngannou one. We've had, as you mentioned, some Europe shows, and then their traditional season series, which comes to an end on Friday in Saudi Arabia. If I asked you, what is like the top PFL moment, this card excluding, what it could bring of the year, what comes to mind for you for like some things they've done really positively?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Francis signing was, you know, one way or another, you could have matched him up against anybody people would watch, just with the storyline, what happened with the UFC, the fact that he went to boxing, the fact that it's Francis Ngannou, who's a tremendously interesting person and just a monster. You got to watch him every time he steps in there. And then to also, I thought they did a good job of building Henan Fajeda as well. Like when Francis jumped to PFL, I was like, who is even out there? Who could they even bring in from anywhere, from KSW? Like, there's Phil DeFry, like, maybe, I don't know. But they did an excellent job of having somebody in-house that they built. And sure, like, that was a big part of it, was Henan doing the right thing and winning the fights and just being an absolute beast himself. But I think that was, if you ask me, like, what was the biggest moment for them this year, I think it was having a guy that many people have, there's more evidence that he might be the best heavyweight in the world, right, than maybe just somebody that won the Bellator belt or kind of that regular storyline. Like, they have some credit to say, this is the guy that never lost the UFC heavyweight title. Here he is. He's the best in the world. So that was, for me, my highlight of the year.
Yeah, I think I probably tend to agree. I mean, just getting him in there was a huge moment. I mean, we've had all these signings, Amanda Serrano, Jake Paul, everything like that. They've made these announcements of the signings, but we haven't really got any of them in there. So I know like Clarissa Shields has fought and things like that, but like, you know, those really, really cornerstone ones, she was kind of buried on a prelim, I think, in the February show. So yeah, I mean, I'm hard pressed to think of someone bigger than Francis, but on the backside of it, do you feel like that having that fight, which I attended over there in Saudi Arabia, like did that elevate the brand, or did they get the cachet off of having Francis fight for them that you think they would have hoped for? I mean, pushing pay-per-view buys aside and all that stuff, just like in terms of the brand, getting people who maybe weren't aware of PFL but know Francis Ngannou to come watch their show. Do you think like any of those prawns that would go off of it worked out for them?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, obviously it was kind of the talk of the town, like the talk of the MMA world that weekend. Mm-hmm. I think it was going up with Anthony Hernandez and Michelle Pereira, if I recall.
Yeah, it was. So
I definitely think it did a good job of drawing some attention. Like I have friends that kind of know some of the names. Like they were like, oh, Francis was on whatever podcast I listened to, or, you know, I saw he was fighting. And like, I think there was still some of them that thought he was like in the UFC. They maybe didn't understand like the whole layout of things, but like mm-hmm. he's got the name recognition. I think sometimes when we're so in the bubble of MMA and we talk about it all the time, we're talking about prelims and Apex shows and contender series and whatever else. Like, I think sometimes we lose scope of like what that name recognition means, like somebody that's been around. Maybe John and Stipe is not the best fight, but people know Stipe's name. Like, I think we undersell that a little bit sometimes. Mm-hmm. When it comes to MMA, and I get it, we want things based off merit. We want the best fights that we know would be the most entertaining to watch, things like that. But I do think that hit, just him being in there, them being able to bring over or sign a champion from another organization, from the UFC, the heavyweight champion of the world, the baddest man in the world, to have him compete under the PFL banner, I do think was a solid win under their belt. I think it maybe, again, like you said, pay-per-view buys. I don't think we have to be pretending that those were probably anything special, but I do think it was a feather under their cap for them to be able to say like, hey, look at our history of what we've done under this banner.
Yeah. And like, look at the fallout of that, how much Dana White talked about them in the next 2 weeks after, yeah. Whether you believe or buy into, you know, the narrative Dana likes to point out about Francis's exit, and even like, you know, it's almost a badge of honor as a promoter when Dana White comes out and like rants against you. I mean, the old school OG fans will remember the tombstone Dana White carried around his video blog that had all the rival promotions at the time, that he ultimately like had a hand in taking down or buying out or whatever. So like, if you can get that competitive juice out of Dana White, I think it shows you're doing something right to a degree, even if, you know, he's crapping on Don Davis for those comments he made about not really being a fan or not being able to name like his favorite fight or whatever. All that stuff kind of helps, but Francis, I think, is still a big piece of their puzzle. From what I hear, there's one fight left on his contract with them. What do you think would be the best move, like in terms of them trying to maximize, say, maybe they resign him, maybe they don't, we'll see. But if you're trying to make the most out of this final fight with Francis Ngannou, what do you think you do with it?
I mentioned him earlier. I would love to see him go up with Phil DeFry. Like, to me, there was when Coker was in charge and he was always talking about, you know, cross promotions and whatever, KSW did seem very vocal that they would be willing to do something like that. Mm-hmm. So I know Bellator's and PFL and Ryzen's partnership kind of has, you know, there still seems to be some, they're friendly there. I'm sure Mike Hogan stays connected with them and everything. But for me, I would love if they could actually hash something out like that, because that dude's, you know, been on a roll. He's killed it over there in KSW. For people that haven't been paying attention since he left the UFC, he's on this incredible winning streak. So that would be kind of the direction I'd lean if they could get it done. Somebody that has some notoriety that isn't just built up through PFL. Again, maybe somebody will emerge. Like, there's that heavyweight fight this weekend. Maybe somebody looks great and we start talking about it. I know Goltsov's a super experienced guy and he's pretty beastly. I'll give him that. I think he would do well in the UFC, but if you want to make it extra special, why not do something cool? Have it go over. Poland loves MMA. Put it in Poland, like, do something cool like that. Just trying to think outside the box.
Yeah, so nothing crazy, like not a Deontay Wilder, like mixed rules match.
If we want to get real, wild, we could do something like that. And again, I think PFL's made it be a big part of their brand, right? To sign sort of deals like the Jake Paul deal or the Amanda Serrano, or to have a rapper, or to have Wiz Khalifa or whatever. Like, they seem to really love doing stuff like that. So the only issue is, I feel like, again, the old Bellator regime did a better job of maybe making some of these random, weird, off the grid signings actually happen, right? Like the Jake Hager of the world, or, you know, bringing in certain Pat Downey, like, you know, from a really high level wrestler, stuff like that. So they don't really necessarily, PFL outside of Clarissa Shields, I don't think we've really seen much like random crossover sort of fight. But if they can get it done, I mean, hell, talk about something that would that would draw eyeballs from all different directions. I mean, if you're going for attention, that would certainly be the one.
Yeah, well, I think if you wanted to maximize attention, it probably feels very, very unlikely. But if you could somehow get Francis Ngannou versus Jake Paul in any sort of rule set matchup, I mean, I know that seems insane for Jake Paul to do, but there is, I know they've been like,
he just fought Mike Tyson, so I guess it's not that good.
I mean, but there was a little heat off of that, right? Francis said he'd slap him. Jake seemed to not like that too much because he's been very supportive of Francis Ngannou's like exit from the UFC. I mean, that would be the biggest thing you could do as PFL, but I feel like very hard to execute. But do you think Jake Paul fights MMA period in 25? Because that's what they're out there saying. I think Peter Murray was saying that when we were in Saudi Arabia for the Ngannou pay-per-view.
I can't, like, I'm not saying he doesn't, but I like don't see what like the incentive would be, right? Like unless they're paying him like a ridiculous amount of money to fight somebody that maybe is not like a journeyman level MMA fighter or somebody with a couple fights, like I don't see a scenario in which that happens. Again, maybe the dollars and signs line up. I dollars and cents line up. I'm not sure, but I kind of lean towards no. Like if I had to be asked that, I'm very doubtful that it happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard sell to get Jake in there given everything he's doing, but maybe the money is crazy. I don't know what their deal is, but they keep claiming it's going to happen. So I don't know. But I guess that segues us into, I guess, kind of the final thing we wanted to talk about. We've kind of sprinkled some thoughts in throughout the show here, but if PFL came to you, Nolan, and we're like, hey, we want to, you know, hire you as an advisor, obviously you can't do that working for Junkie with the bias and everything, but say you're able to move away, clean slate, no outside repercussions. And they're like, give us a few ideas on how we can enhance the product going into 25. You noted earlier, they just announced today that the championship fights for Friday's event in Saudi Arabia will allow elbows, which shouldn't be news because it should just be part of the MMA rule set, especially for a championship fight, but it is news. And I kind of quote tweeted like, now do it for every fight. I get a little bit with the tournaments, but as you kind of alluded to earlier, maybe one of those ideas is getting rid of the tournaments altogether and the seasons as they prefer them to be.
I think that's the biggest thing, man, that I would do at this point. I thought it was perfect for them to separate themselves from Bellator when there were three coinciding different separate companies that were trying to be the elite in MMA, right? Now there's really no reason for that. And I think if you look historically at what promotions have done the best going up against the UFC, it's been ones that have been able to put on the best fights in their promotion, right? And so this is a very restrictive sort of setup. It's a very there's a number of different factors that work against you in making those big fights and putting on the shows that will draw fans and draw eyeballs and get you credit and get people talking about you, right? Like, I mean, think about it this way, right? We talked about already the elbows. There is the fact that it's a tournament bracket sort of style sometimes, and additionally, it has to be on a certain schedule, right? Somebody's hurt, they break their hand, they can't fight for 2 weeks past it. Oh, you're out. Like, there's just so many different things that work against you. And it would get rid of the confusion if you put it all under one umbrella, one branding umbrella, and just made it PFL. And I think you would get time in and time out. There would be no card that we'd look at and say, oh, like, this just seems like a lot of random sort of fights. And I get it. It's appealing to put it on merit. And, you know, we don't do things like the UFC. We don't have favorites, which again, I mean, they're out there matchmaking all these regular season fights. So if you're talking about the two postseason fights that you had, sure, you didn't do, you know, that was merit-based and it was a bracket, but the rest of it is just match made like the UFC. So I say scrap all that stuff. It was great. It got people talking about you. It made you different from Bellator when you needed to be, but now you need to compete with the UFC. Just put on the best fights out there. That's like the winning recipe. It shouldn't be that difficult.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I mean, it's tricky, right? Because you look at these championship fights on Saturday or on Friday, and you wonder like how many people are really known to like the casual fan. A lot of long Russian names and things like that. I mean, you're getting good fighters, and I won't take it away, but you're investing $6 million into these six title fight results, and yeah, that is great for the athletes. But you wonder, even if you cut it down to maybe two tournaments instead of six, like, and you can still keep a little bit, maybe pick your best weight classes and do something there just so you can at least still have that a little bit and have that, incentive for the fighters to maybe chase that 1 million. But the end of the day, what is that really giving you, right? Like, they've done this for several years now. Yeah, there's been a couple solid champions for them. Like, Kayla Harrison was obviously a huge deal, but she's no longer there. Like, how much is, you know, Magomed Umulatov, say he wins the welterweight title, how much is he going out there and promoting the PFL brand, saying, you know, this is such an amazing experience? I know there's a language barrier and all that stuff, but like, you wonder what the back end of this that you're getting back from paying all this money. And maybe if you cut down a couple of these seasons as well, you have the money there to pay the Patricio Pitbulls and the, like, the actual fighters that will do more for your brand and putting it out there. So yeah, that was kind of like one of my ideas, maybe cut down on the number of tournaments you do. I think you could still run one or two of them. If you can get a really good, like, 8 to 10 person field, which I think throughout their roster, they're capable of doing that. So like, that would be great if they could do that. You kind of got to streamline it a little bit, with how you do that. And I think another idea I wrote down, which seems pretty simple, but I think they just got to tighten up the production a little bit too, right? Like, there's a lot of downtime in between these fights, a lot of filler. The MMA fans just want to go, man, especially if you're going to be running an event like on Friday with six title fights, like 6 5 rounders. And it gets tricky. Like, you see how historically a lot of these championship finals have played out. Is there any reason to not play it safe if you're one of these fighters? Like, the prize is so big at the end there. How much risk are you really going to take? You know, you're up two rounds in a title fight. You can cruise the last three if possible, and it might not be entertaining, but that's the biggest payday of your career by a long shot. So it's almost like a D incentive in a way. And I'd never root against fighters being paid all they can, but if you're trying to produce a product to the fans, there seems to be some like counterintuitiveness with how these finals in particular work out, because it's a long night and we end up getting a lot of five rounders usually.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you just touched on it there. I mean, at the end of the day, there is an entertainment, you know, purpose of all this. Right. And that's why I've always been against open scoring. I know I'm kind of maybe in the minority, and people will say like, well, it's better for fighters. And I don't totally disagree with you, but at the same time, it's like, it does suck a lot of the entertainment out, which I think is a big part of what draws people into the sport and gets people paid. Anyways. But yeah, I mean, you hit on it. Like, there's just the broadcast, it shouldn't be painful for people to watch. Like, I don't think, if you're, again, if you're the UFC, if people are, if they have you where they want you, and they actually do a pretty, I think the UFC's broadcast, like, it moves along pretty quick. Like, I don't, you know, we're well past the Fox Sports days of us sitting there feeling like it was, the card was never going to end. Like, I think they're pretty, even though they have you where they want you with pay-per-views and stuff, they don't necessarily take advantage of it. And so I don't know exactly what the approach is with PFL. If they think we need to educate people more about these fighters because they don't know, and they're coming over from the UFC and they'll be interested in their stories. But I think at the end of the day, like, people want to see things moving. They want to see the fights. So the user experience, I think, is oftentimes overlooked in any industry. It's like, oh, how do we make things better? How do we change this? How do we add this? But it's like, just take a step back and look at your product. And are people frustrated watching it? Do they feel like it's dragging? Like, those are very basic questions. Again, I don't know all the advertising ins and outs. I don't know how the broadcasting works. Maybe there's factors I'm not considering. But to me, that's a huge one, a huge, huge, huge one. And it seems to have maybe gotten a little bit better, but not really since this has become a very vocalized problem on social media.
Yeah. And I totally get it. Like, if there's certain things you have to do to pay the bills, to do your sponsors and things like that, you got to do what you got to do on a broadcast. But, you know, circling back to kind of the Patricio Pitbull complaint, like, how much are they paying this Nav fella, who I'm not very aware who even that is, to perform on the show? Yeah. So it goes to show how little I'm into the Canadian music scene, if he is, but maybe I've heard one of his songs. But nevertheless, like, you know, could you have paid one person to fight, like, given one person to fight on the money that you're paying this guy to do? How many people are interested in that in the middle of a card with six title fights, all that kind of stuff? So it's just, some of it feels a little out of touch with what the fan base wants. And I don't know who's calling those shots, but, you know, like, having Ray Lewis go over there for the event I was at and taking up a bunch of broadcast time and all those sorts of things. I mean, he was apparently there so he could give this massive locker room speech, one of his famous pregame speeches, to fire everyone up. And that card was kind of a dud. So I don't really know if it even worked in that regard.
Yeah. Maybe Ray Lewis isn't the best base for MMA, but yeah, I mean, talk about terrible timing with that tweet too. Like, I know obviously it's probably something that was planned far in advance, but I'm sure Don Davis or whoever got a little bit of a splitting headache when Patricio's tweet comes out you know, 12 out, whatever, 16 hours before your scheduled announcement of that. But again, it just proves the point, right? It was almost like predictable that that was going to happen from Patricio. So, or by Patricio's prediction was just, you know, spot on. So, I don't know, man. This, hopefully like a year from now, we do this again. And if you'll have me back and we have a little bit, we talk about some of the changes that were made. Cause again, I think some of them, it's very evident of what they, the different things they could do to make things better. It's just a matter of doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. They, and again, this is us just trying to, you know, be fair and unbiased and go with what we're seeing off. But yeah, the timing of that, those complaints were not great, but hopefully, as you said earlier, I thought you put it perfectly. This serves as a wake up call. And there is some positive things to look at. I mean, Dakota Decheva fighting Tyler Santos on this Friday card for the women's flyweight championship, a big deal. Dakota is someone they built well through their European series. Now she's in the main roster and they made the run. You know, I think what you said about the matchmaking, there could be some criticism there. Maybe if it was like a fair thing, we get this fight in the regular season or whatever, but this is ideal scenario too. This is the fight we've kind of wanted from the beginning, Dakota Decheva versus Tyler Santos. So hopefully it works out for them. I think Dakota is someone they can really hang their hat off. You know, kind of like the second coming of Kayla Harrison in that regard, completely different style, but someone with some personality and someone you can sell around. So that's one of the bright spots potentially, but yeah, we'll see what happens. Anything else you want to touch on before I let you go on this topic, Nolan?
No, man, I'm pumped that you're doing this. It was exciting to be on and yeah, I know. I think we'll be on working this one on Friday together, right?
Yeah, I believe so. So good times ahead. There'll be the MENA fights as well. So we'll see how early I actually wake up to start going for this. I don't know if I'll be up at 5:30 again. I got to do that with the great UFC Macau card. But we'll have all the coverage over on MMA Junkie for this. Appreciate you, Nolan, being here. And we'll hopefully have you back here on the Bonfire many times in the future. Going to take a quick break and then wrap things up. Hope you all enjoyed the chat there with Nolan. I thought we covered a lot of ground there. By no means was this an attempt to spear PFL or paint things in too negative of a light, but I felt like it was an important conversation to have because, as I said, came into this year with a lot of hopes and optimism on what this can be, and I don't think even the most hopeful person could say this shaked out as expected or as hoped. So just wanted to address things, and it was great to kind of speak freely and openly at length for what's going on PFL. We obviously don't get a ton of time to do that. UFC takes up so much oxygen in the room and, you know, understandably so, but I think this was a great time. Not a ton going on in the UFC world outside of the fallout of Conor McGregor's sexual assault civil case ruling, and I've spoken about that at length over on MMA Junkie. You can see videos, read stories, a lot of ground being covered on that front. So this felt like a good opportunity to put the spotlight on PFL, and I think we did a good job of doing just that. But for now, that does it for another episode of the show. I'll be back next week ahead of the final. That is right, final UFC pay-per-view of 2024, UFC 310 going down at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. I won't be there, but Nolan will be there with our good videographer, Mr. Ken Hathaway, and they will bring you the goods. So hope all my American friends have a happy Thanksgiving weekend, and to the rest of you, I'll see you back here on the Bonfire.